I want you to imagine just for a second that you are locked in this heated, agonizing, and entirely bureaucratic battle with your
Oh,
neighbors.
that sounds like a nightmare.
Right. And the battleground isn't over like property lines or noise complaints. It is over something as remarkably mundane as replacing the old windows on your apartment building.
Yeah, it sounds incredibly tedious. It's the kind of hyper-local dispute that makes anyone who has ever lived in a managed building just want to pull their hair out.
Exactly. Well, hold on to that image because this specific, seemingly trivial scenario recently snowballed into a major, utterly fascinating legal
It
decision.
really did, yeah.
One that effectively redefines the legal boundaries of a very powerful word in modern real estate, which is sustainability.
Yeah, it takes a term that is, often treated as just a corporate buzzword and sharpens it into this highly effective legal weapon.
And that is our mission for this deep dive. We are looking at a December 2025 decision with a slight amendment in January 2026 from the New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal.
All right, the tribunal down in Australia.
Yep. And the case is called Fegent v. the Owner Strata Plan, known 6544. We are going to explore how a bitter fight over whether to install sliding windows or awning windows in a Cremorne apartment block, completely exposes the hidden power of green legislation.
It's a wild ride, honestly.
It is. And most importantly, we're going to break down what this means for you if you ever find yourself navigating property laws or a homeowners association. Okay, let's unpack this. We have to start with the building itself and the mechanics of the initial conflict.
Sure, yeah, let's set the scene.
So we are looking at a 14-story apartment building in Cremorne. It has 36 individual lots, and the windows on this building are practically vintage.
Very bent.
They are single-glazed sliding windows from circa 1972.
Right, and when you think about 1970s single-glazed aluminum windows, you're talking about infrastructure that has been continuously exposed to coastal wind, rain, and thermal expansion for over 50 years.
Basically, half a century of taking a beating.
Exactly. They have completely reached the end of their serviceable life. I mean,
Yeah.
the weather seals degrade, the tracks warp, and structurally, they just need to go.
So the owners' corporation, which is the collective body of the apartment owners, they recognize this, right? And they want to replace these old sliding windows with new modern awning
Which
windows.
makes sense on paper.
It does. But here is where the friction starts. A lot owner named William Fegent aggressively opposes this plan. He, along with a minority block of owners, wants to stick with the traditional sliding windows.
Yeah, and it is a fundamental tension in property management, really. The majority wants a modern architectural upgrade, while a minority prefers to maintain the original aesthetic or the existing functionality.
Right. So in April 2024, the Owners Corporation holds a meeting. They pass a resolution to change the windows to the awning style. But Fijin immediately takes them to the tribunal, and in a massive plot twist, he actually wins.
He does. He completely shuts the awning window project down.
And to understand how he pulled that off, we need to look at Section 108 of the Strata Schemes Management Act 2015.
Right, so Section 108 governs changes to common property. If a strata scheme wants to add to, or alter, or erect a new structure to improve the common property, which, changing the fundamental style of windows from sliding to awning would absolutely fall under.
Because it alters the whole look and function of the building.
Exactly. The law dictates you cannot just rely on a simple majority vote for that. You need what is called a special resolution.
And a special resolution sets a very specific mathematical threshold, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. For a special resolution to pass, no more than 25% of the value of the votes can be cast against it.
Wow. Okay. So it's essentially a veto power for a very small minority.
It really is.
It's like trying to pick a restaurant for a group of friends.
Oh, I like that comparison.
Yeah, it's like if just a quarter of the group says no, nobody gets to eat. Even if 74% of the capital desperately wants to pivot the company and make an upgrade, that 26% block can entirely paralyze the operation.
That is an excellent way to frame it.
Yeah.
And there is a deliberate legislative intent behind that golden share mechanism, you know?
Right, they didn't just pick that number out of a hat.
No, exactly. When you are dealing with a strata scheme, you are dealing with people's primary residences and their major financial assets. So the 25% threshold is designed as a structural shield.
To protect the little guy, basically.
Right. It protects minority property owners from being bulldozed into sweeps of expensive, highly disruptive aesthetic changes that they simply do not want and perhaps cannot afford to fund.
Makes total sense. So in April 2024, William Fidjent and his allies held slightly more than 25% of the vote. And they used that shield flawlessly to block the awning windows.
They did. But the owners' corporation, you know, the 74% who wanted the upgrade, they didn't just accept defeat.
No, they didn't. They went back to the statute looking for a structural bypass. And they found Section 132B.
Yeah, they pivoted brilliantly to Section 132B, which covers the sustainability infrastructure resolution.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, this is where the power dynamics of the building completely flip. Under this section, if a proposed change to the common property is officially classified as sustainability infrastructure, the requirement for a special resolution just vanishes.
Wait, really? It just goes away?
Completely. You only need a simple majority, so less than 50% against, to pass it.
Oh, wow. So if they can just attach the word green to the project, Fedgent's 25% golden share is suddenly worthless.
Exactly.
So, of course, the owner's corporation scrambles to find the environmental proof. They bring in a firm called BAM Consulting and an expert named Mr. Nathan Wells to produce a sustainability infrastructure assessment.
Right. And the report that Mr. Wells delivers focuses heavily on the thermodynamic failures of the 1972 windows. I mean, he evaluates the new awning windows, specifically a thermally broken double glazed option.
Okay, thermally broken, meaning they don't conduct heat as easily.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And he presents the data on their U values and SHGC.
So they essentially brought in hard math to prove these new windows were a thermal fortress compared to the 1970s glass.
Precisely. U value measures thermal transmittance, so it dictates how rapidly a window loses heat from the inside of the building to the outside.
Right. And SHGC.
That's the solar heat gain coefficient, which measures how much solar radiation passes through the glass into the apartment.
I see.
The 1972 single-pane sliding windows essentially act as a magnifying glass in the summer and an icebox in the winter.
Ugh, sounds miserable.
Yeah. Mr. Wells concluded that the double-glazed awning windows would substantially reduce the building's energy consumption, lower greenhouse gas emissions, and critically, help the building align with modern National Construction Code standards.
We should pause on the National Construction Code for a second, because legacy buildings from the 70s are constantly fighting a losing battle against those modern baselines, aren't they?
Oh, they are bleeding energy. The National Construction Code has become incredibly strict regarding thermal efficiency and weatherproofing.
Right. We care a lot more about that now than we did 50 years ago.
Exactly. A 1972 high-rise is light years away from passing a modern compliance test. So when an expert reports that an upgrade will pull the building closer to those modern, stringent baselines, it carries massive legal weight.
So armed with this data, the Owners Corporation holds another meeting on October 15th, 2024. They table Motion 7 for the awning windows and Motion 8 for the double glazing.
Right.
And because they are leveraging Section 132B, they pass both motions with a simple majority. Fadgen's veto block is completely bypassed.
On paper, the resolutions are legally binding.
Now, wait a minute. Did they actually care about the environment, or was this just a convenient loophole to get the awning windows they wanted all along? I mean, surely there's a paper trail of them discussing energy metrics in their committee meetings leading up to this, right?
Yeah. Well, what's fascinating here is that is exactly what Fidjent noticed. He looked at the timeline and concluded that the sustainability label was nothing more than a retroactive legal fiction.
Just a handy excuse.
Exactly. An excuse designed specifically to override his veto. And that suspicion is the foundation of his second, highly aggressive, legal counterattack at the tribunal.
Because Fidjent argues that the owner's corporation couldn't care less about U-values or solar heat gain. And he brings receipts.
He really does.
He presents correspondence sent to the lot owners by members of the Strata Committee in May and October of 2024. That's right when they were plotting the second attempt at the window replacement.
Yeah, he brings forward these documents to highlight a glaring omission. Because across these crucial letters to the owners, there is not a single mention of energy efficiency.
Not a single word about reducing the building's carbon footprint.
Nothing. Nothing at all. Instead, the letters focus intensely on wind compliance, water pressure loadings, and Mr. Wells' professional view that installing new sliding windows would result in severe water leaks.
Okay, let's dig into the engineering of that for a second. Why would sliding windows leak more than awning windows on a 14-story building?
Well, it comes down to structural deflection and weatherproofing under high wind loads. You see, sliding windows run on tracks.
Right.
And at 14 stories up, coastal wind pressure can actually deflect the aluminum framing slightly, which compromises the weather seals and allows water to pool in those tracks and enter the apartment.
Oh, wow. So you just get puddles in your living room.
Basically, yeah.
Bleh.
But awning windows, which are hinged at the top and push outward, they often seal tighter against their frame under positive wind pressure. So the owner's corporation was clearly terrified of water ingress.
Right, that makes sense. So Fagent's lawyers look at this paper trail and they build their case around this concept of dominant purpose.
Yes, a very important legal concept here.
They argue that for a resolution to legally qualify under Section 132B, sustainability has to be the key, the overriding intent of the project.
Right, it can't just be a side effect.
Exactly. Fugent claims that energy efficiency wasn't even in the collective consciousness of the owners' corporation until after they realized they needed a loophole.
It is a direct attack on their legislative intent. And to bolster this, Fugent brings in his own expert, a facade engineer named Amir Naderi.
Ah, the battle of the experts.
Yes, the battle of the experts here is crucial. Naderi testifies that if the owners' corporation was genuinely focused only on energy efficiency, well, the market is full of modern, thermally broken, double-glazed sliding windows that boast the exact same eco-friendly ratings as the awning ones.
Oh, so Naderi is arguing that you can engineer a sliding window to meet the exact same thermal specs.
Exactly.
Which allows Fugent to say, if you can get green sliding windows, but you're still forcing us to buy awning windows, your real purpose isn't being green. Your real purpose is just getting the awning aesthetic and the weatherproofing.
That is precisely his argument, yes.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because we have to ask how the law actually handles mixed motivations, right? Let's say you go out and buy a brand new hybrid vehicle.
Okay.
But you only bought it because it has, like, an incredible surround sound system and the acceleration is fantastic and it looks cool.
Right. You just like the car itself.
Yeah. You don't actually care about the fuel efficiency at all. It's just a secondary byproduct of the purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Does your underlying, slightly superficial motivation legally strip that car of its eco-friendly status?
That analogy perfectly illustrates the dilemma the tribunal faces here. Because in a legal dispute, trying to prove what was in the collective consciousness of 36 different property owners is basically an impossible standard.
Because everyone has their own reasons.
Exactly. You cannot psychoanalyze a corporate body. Some owners might have voted for Motion 7 to stop water leaks. Some might have preferred the aesthetic of awning windows. And, you know, some might have genuinely cared about reducing their winter heating bills.
Which means the tribunal has to somehow separate the subjective motives of the owners from the objective outcome of the upgrade.
Correct. Under Australian common law, when a statute simply says an action must be for the purpose of something, it does not imply it must be the sole or even the dominant purpose, unless Parliament explicitly writes the word dominant into the legislation.
But Fagent doesn't stop at the intent argument, does he? He also attacks them on procedural grounds regarding the timeline of that October meeting.
Yeah, Fagent is very thorough. He targets Section 132B1, which mandates that before approving a sustainability resolution, the owner's corporation must consider the costs of the infrastructure.
Like expected running and maintenance costs.
Exactly.
Which makes sense. You can't just blind vote on a green initiative without a baseline understanding of the financial impact.
Exactly. So Fagent points to what was called Amended Resolution 20 from the October agenda. In that specific resolution, which, crucially, was voted on after Motion 7 passed, the owners formally asked for a report showing whether the thermal brake frames were cost-effective regarding energy savings over time.
Oh, wow. So they voted first and then asked for the cost-benefit analysis.
That is Fidgenton's argument. He argues that by asking for a cost-benefit analysis after the vote, they violated the statute, rendering the approval of the awning windows legally invalid.
Okay, so Fidgent has effectively proven that they didn't care about the environment in their internal emails.
Right.
He's proven through his engineer that sliding windows could have achieved the same energy goals.
Yes.
And he's proven they asked for a cost analysis late in the meeting. I mean, legally, it sounds like he's backed them into a total corner. How does the owners corporation possibly get out of this? And how does senior member Dr. K.M. George rule on the verdict?
Well, the tribunal systematically dismantles Fidgent's case, starting with the dominant purpose argument. Dr. George entirely rejects the idea that sustainability must be the primary motivation.
Really? It's fascinating that Dr. George had to bypass the actual text of Section 132B and dig into the 2020 second reading speech just to figure out what Parliament was thinking.
It is, yeah.
It really highlights how legally vague the definition of sustainability infrastructure is in the statute itself.
Statutes often leave a certain amount of interpretive void, you know, which is why tribunals rely so heavily on second reading speeches to decode legislative ambiguity.
To see what the politicians actually meant when they wrote it.
Exactly. When the law was introduced in June 2020, the sponsoring politician explicitly stated that Parliament intended the lower voting threshold to unlock a broad range of initiatives to reduce environmental impact. It was deliberately designed to be flexible.
And there was a specific, highly practical example in that 2020 speech that essentially doomed Fidgent's argument about intent, right?
Yes, the garage exhaust fan example.
I love this part.
It's very clarifying. The speech noted that the new law wasn't just for obvious additions like solar panels. It also applied to upgrading existing infrastructure, specifically mentioning the replacement of exhaust fans in a garage with a more energy-efficient system.
Which is the perfect parallel to the windows.
It is. Think about it. A garage exhaust fan serves multiple critical functions. It provides ventilation, it removes toxic carbon monoxide, it ensures life safety.
Yeah, you don't want to suffocate in your garage.
Exactly. Its primary dominant purpose is keeping the building's occupants safe. But if the newly installed fan also happens to save energy compared to the old one, it legally qualifies as sustainability infrastructure.
So the legal test is just a purpose, not the dominant purpose.
Right.
As long as sustainability is one of the tangible outcomes, the project qualifies for the lower voting threshold, regardless of why the owners privately wanted the upgrade.
Exactly. The tribunal ruled that restricting the law only to projects where green energy is the primary motivation would completely contradict Parliament's intention. The goal was to actively encourage strata schemes to modernize and make their buildings more sustainable.
Okay, but what about the procedural attack? Fidgent had them dead to rights on asking for the cost-benefit analysis after voting on the windows.
Well, the tribunal threw that argument out as well, based on a strict review of the meeting's chronology.
Oh, really? What did they miss?
While it is true they asked for a detailed cost-benefit report in Resolution 20, they had already tabled a BAM consulting tender reconciliation during Motion 6.
Ah, and Motion 6 occurred prior to the controversial vote on Motion 7.
Exactly.
So they did have the initial baseline costs, including three different tenders and notes on minimal maintenance in front of them before they cast their votes.
They did. The tribunal noted that Section 132B does not require an exhaustive, granular, comparative costing before a vote. It merely requires a basic consideration of the costs.
I see.
So asking for further, more detailed analysis later in the meeting didn't invalidate the fact that they had already met the baseline legal requirement beforehand.
Wow. So the result is a total legal sweep. Fidgent's application is dismissed in its entirety.
Yep, he lost everything.
The owner's corporation gets their way, the 1972 sliding windows are coming out, and the new double-glazed awning windows are going in. So what does this all mean?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, the precedent this establishes is absolutely massive for property law and strata management.
How so?
It confirms that as long as an infrastructure upgrade tangibly improves energy efficiency over decades-old materials, property owners can actively use the sustainability clause to bypass minority roadblocks.
If you are listening to this and you live in a managed building, or maybe you sit on an HOA board or just care deeply about property rights, this deep dive is incredibly relevant to you.
Absolutely.
What the owners corporation did here was essentially flip the script. You now know that sustainability isn't just an environmental goal. It is one of the most powerful procedural tools in modern property law.
It's a loophole, but a legally sanctioned one.
Right. If you want to modernize an aging building, upgrade the roofing, change the HVAC system, and you have a stubborn minority using their 25% golden share to block you, well, finding the green angle is your legal skeleton key.
It completely shifts the traditional balance of power. If the new infrastructure can be proven to be greener than the existing infrastructure, the simple majority rules.
The traditional protections designed to field the minority simply vanish under the umbrella of environmental progress.
They really do.
And that leaves us with a highly provocative thought for you to mull over. Think about the unavoidable march of technology and manufacturing.
Oh, this is a great point.
Right, because as our baseline engineering gets better, eventually every new product on the market, every commercial window, every air conditioning unit, every insulation panel will naturally be vastly more energy efficient than the 30 or 40-year-old version it is replacing.
It is the inevitable trajectory of the National Construction Code and global building standards.
Yeah.
Everything is moving toward net zero efficiency.
So if every modern replacement is inherently a green upgrade compared to the legacy infrastructure it replaces, does this mean the traditional 25% special majority protection is effectively dead?
It's a real possibility.
Has the concept of a minority veto just been swallowed whole by the unavoidable march of green technology? If every necessary structural change automatically qualifies as sustainable, does the minority ever get to say no again?
It is a structural vulnerability in the legislation that every property owner is going to have to reckon with sooner rather than later.
It's definitely something to keep in mind the next time you look out your apartment window. Keep questioning, keep learning, and as always, stay curious.